What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks. Governor Gavin Newsom has signed legislation that allows Arizona abortion providers and their patients to cross state lines to perform procedures here in California. Joining us to discuss is Amani Gandhi, editor-at-large for Rewire News Group. She also co-hosts the podcast Boom Lawyered. Good morning, Amani.
Good morning, Kat.
We never have, like, happy stuff to talk about.
The nature of the business.
You know. All right, Amani, I want to provide some context. So in 1864, Arizona passes what law?
In 1864, Arizona passed an abortion ban. I think it's critical to remember that 1864 is Civil War era. It's a Civil War era ban. And so you have to think about the types of people that were being reproductively oppressed at that time, right? Black women were being used for essentially as brood mares in order to produce more enslaved people to continue generating the economy of this country. So that abortion ban went into effect in 1864, and then efforts to repeal that ban are underway. And in a response to that, Gavin Newsom has signed a law, or California has enacted a law that allows Arizona doctors to be essentially fast-tracked when it comes to licensing in California in order to provide services in California to Californians, but also to provide services to Arizonans, because currently in Arizona, I believe there's a 15-week abortion ban. So the 1864 abortion ban was repealed, but there's still the 15-week abortion ban that is in place. I believe that's correct.
California Republicans say this wasn't a necessary move by Governor Newsom. They say because Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs has given an executive order that there's no abortion-related charges to be brought to courts. What say you?
Well, the problem with issuing guidance is that it doesn't have the force and effect of law. So, you know, to the extent that Katie Hobbs stops being governor at some point, to the extent that there are law enforcement, prosecutors, police in abortion hostile counties in Arizona, that guidance doesn't necessarily actually help doctors, particularly when we're talking about abortion bans that confer criminal liability onto doctors. I mean, doctors across the country are being faced with decisions about when it is they can provide abortion care, when it is that a law enforcement official or a prosecutor is going to come behind them and say that for whatever reason, the abortion that they thought was legal when they performed it is now illegal, and you have to defend yourself in court. And if you lose, you might end up in jail. So the problem, I think the good thing about Newsom's move is that it alleviates some of that pressure from Arizona doctors when it comes to trying to figure out when an abortion past 15 weeks is appropriate or is medically indicated. I think one of the most distressing bits about the news coming out of Texas, right, the Zerowski case, the Texas Supreme Court said that Texas's medical exception provision was perfectly fine, is that people aren't really thinking about how difficult it is to be in litigation. People aren't thinking about how difficult it is for doctors to be in litigation, because even if it ends up that the decision that they made was the correct one, they still need to defend themselves. They still need to pay attorneys. They still end up paying higher premiums in malpractice insurance, which can then lead to doctors leaving abortion hostile areas in order to provide their services in areas where they will be appreciated. So it's sort of layers and layers of issues and problems when it comes to this sort of reproductive oppression. And I think that the Newsom bill is a great start. But I think when you talk about who it is that these abortion bans are affecting the most, I'm not sure that this bill is actually going to widen access for those people, but certainly for the people who are wealthy enough to travel to California, for the people, and this is not in any way to denigrate people like Kate Cox, people like the plaintiffs in the Texas Zerowski case, these 20 plaintiffs who had complications and had to travel out of state to get abortions. Those people are lucky enough to be able to do that, but that is not the lived circumstances of, you know, Latina people of color, Latina pregnant women and pregnant people, of Black pregnant women and pregnant people. So I think we need to focus on on how difficult it is for doctors to defend themselves against these lawsuits and how difficult it remains for low-income people, people of very little means, to access these abortions.
You do it every time. You segue to the thing I was going to ask you next. Legit, I was going to say Newsom has officially declared California a sanctuary city. He's even putting aside $20 million in taxpayer money to help people travel here. And I was going to ask, like, who does this actually help? And who knows about the bills, right? Like, that's the thing. It doesn't often trickle down to the people that need it the most. Is there anywhere else in the country, Amani, that is making moves like Newsom is here in California?
I mean, there are definitely, and the list of states is not going to come to me off the top of my head. There are definitely states that have sanctuary sort of provisions in their laws, right? I think the state Vermont, Michigan, I'm not sure if they have sanctuary provisions, but certainly they have reproductive freedom provisions. The states that have shield laws, it's still unclear how they're going to work once they are tested. You know, once a state like Alabama wants to reach its arm into California or reach its arm into another state and try to scoop up people who are performing legal abortions in those states on people who reside in states that are abortion hostile. So it's unclear where this is all going. And I think the travel issue, when it comes to traveling for abortion, I think that's going to be the next big issue, because right now we do have places, for example, Lubbock, Texas is one I was just reading about, where ordinances have been passed that prevent people from transporting pregnant women and pregnant people through those areas on their way to other areas to get legal abortions. And what I think is really distressing about these travel bans, and what I think people really need to understand, particularly pregnant people, is that the pregnant person themselves, the pregnant woman herself, is not going to be yoked up by these laws. They're not going to be criminally or civilly liable for transporting themselves through an area in order to get an abortion. It's the people who are helping them that are really being targeted. Those are the people that are being targeted. So if you drive someone through Lubbock, Texas on your way to an abortion, you could be targeted. If you send someone money so that they can be driven by someone else through Lubbock, Texas in order to get an abortion, you can be targeted. They're being very smart in the way, and I hate to sort of even give them this credit, but anti-choicers, particularly people like Jonathan Mitchell, who was the architect of this sort of bounty hunter slash interstate travel slash let's try to get records on where it is that people are getting abortion so that we can find the mutual aid organizations and the abortion funds that are helping them get there. This is all new territory that we're in. And thus far, Mitchell has been unsuccessful in gathering these records and targeting organizations in Texas like Lilith Fund or any other abortion fund. But that can only last so long because the man is clever. And I don't think that Democrats are generally being as clever in response. I'm not talking about reproductive rights organizations. I mean, actual elected Democrats need to be focusing on what Jonathan Mitchell is doing and how it is he is enacting policies that will literally terrorize pregnant people by putting everyone who comes in contact with them at risk for some sort of abortion conspiracy. So this conspiracy is swirling around the pregnant person who's just trying to get care and may not know that every person that she asks for care, she is putting at risk for criminal or civil liability under these new laws that are these new bounty hunter laws that are, we are entering this sort of surveillance snitch era. And it's important that people understand who they're putting at risk, what they're putting at risk when they're in an abortion hostile state looking to get an abortion.
Talking about abortion hostile states, let's talk a little bit more about Texas. GOP legislators there are advocating for the death penalty under the heading Equal Protection for Preborn Children. It is part of the GOP platform that they've put forth. One of the things that struck me was the language preborn. And inside of this legislation, it doesn't explicitly say death penalty, but advocates say that equal protection for preborn is exactly what that means. Can you elaborate?
Yeah, I mean, we are in the era of abortion politics in this country where pregnant women are going to have to compete for constitutional rights with the fetus that they're carrying. And so it's going to be a weighing of personhood rights. Who's more of a person, this fetus or this pregnant person? And I think what's going to happen is that the equation is going to work out so that it's always the pregnant person that's on the losing end, right? Because the pregnant person got pregnant when they shouldn't have, or is the type of person that is seeking an abortion, is a non-compliant person, and therefore that is the type of person that these anti-abortion advocates are going to target. So when we talk about equal protection and when we talk about the 14th Amendment, what we're literally talking about is taking these equal protection rights and extending them to fertilized eggs or to blastocysts or to, you know, embryos. And, you know, that's not what the 14th Amendment was for. The 14th Amendment is a Reconstruction Amendment. The 14th Amendment was about Black and white relations. It wasn't about fetus and pregnant person relations, but we are in the process over the last, I would say, 10 years of rewriting the Equal Protection Clause so that it no longer does what it was implemented to do, which is bring Black people in this country into some parity with white people, but rather we are entering this era of we're all colorblind, and I guess we're now, you know, genotypically blind or species blind. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is when you're preferring the rights of a fetus over the rights of a person, but it is distressing, and that has always been their goal. When I first started doing this work in 2010, 2011, one of my first projects was gathering all the personhood laws across the country and the federal personhood laws. And federally, they have introduced personhood laws something since like 1973. So at some point, that is going to become the general policy of this country that, you know, and we're seeing it already in Alabama, right? When Alabama deemed frozen embryos to be the equivalent of a child. You know, we obviously know that frozen embryos aren't a child, because if frozen embryos and a child are in a burning building, what are we saving first? We're not even thinking about the frozen embryos. We're saving the child. So there's an ongoing rewriting of the 14th Amendment so that it protects fetuses. There's an ongoing gaslighting campaign to sort of confuse people into thinking that it's okay that fetuses, preborn, quote unquote, preborn people are supposed to have more rights than the people carrying them. We are entering very distressing times, and it's not going to get any better for quite some time. So it's a generational fight. It's one that I'm prepared to have, but it's one that people should really just sort of buckle down and try to understand, particularly if you are a person seeking services, because you really need to understand who you may be putting at risk by talking to about your pregnancy.
Incredibly troubling times. Like I sort of said it, you know, sarcastically, when all of this really started to swirl, you know, there was also the time that I was watching The Handmaid's Tale. And when I'm looking at laws like this, right, I'm like, we're moving towards something like that. We've got South Carolina, also in Georgia. They have a prenatal protection act that from the moment of fertilization, Imani, how do you prove that in court? How do you criminalize someone?
I mean,
that would mean like you realize you're pregnant or maybe, you know, whatever happens, and you go the next day to get the plan B, and that could be a criminal act. Punishable by death.
Yeah, I mean, they've been talking about punishable by death for a long time now, but I think there was a movement among anti-choicers to move away from calling women baby killers, calling pregnant people baby killers, and to try to go after the doctors who were coercing them and the other organizations who were helping them. But we're now sort of swinging back to, yeah, women are baby killers, right? We've passed all these laws. We've tried to stop you women from terminating your pregnancies, and you keep doing it. So the only thing that we can think of left is to terminate you. Now, how that's a quote unquote pro-life position is something I will never understand. But on the flip side of that, I mean, if I'm looking at it through a purely anti-choice lens, if you truly believe that a fertilized egg is the same as a person, and a pregnant person, you know, terminates a pregnancy that you believe to be a full person, then sure, why wouldn't you believe in execution for that pregnant person? Because that pregnant person committed murder in the anti-choicer's eyes. I mean, that's the sort of conversations I think that Democrats need to be more comfortable having. They need to be more comfortable about talking about how absurd those policies are. And even if they're afraid to have these conversations because maybe they're concerned that the winds aren't going to blow in their direction, I cannot imagine that the majority of this country is going to be okay with executing pregnant people who get abortions. Like, I just can't imagine that this country is going to be okay with that. But, you know, 2 years ago, I wouldn't have imagined right. that we'd be calling frozen embryos kids. So, right. you know, things change rapidly in this world, and it's just really difficult to keep up.
All right, Imani, I've got to leave it there. We will definitely have you back as we continue to track all of this. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
It's always my pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world for all of us to thrive in. That's it for this episode, fam. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programming is funded exclusively by listeners. If you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. Remember, we all we got.